Julie Mintz is a singer-songwriter originally from Corpus Christi, Texas. An artistic child, Julie grew up surrounded by the music of greats like Patsy Cline and Dolly Parton, which helped influence her own songwriting. While Julie loved singing and playing piano, she had a strong aversion to actually performing in front of audiences. That, coupled with the fact that she came from a more academically driven family, steered Julie away from pursuing a career in music. But after studying neuroscience and working in a hospital during college, she realized that she was on the wrong path. She began playing music again and moved to LA to try her hand in the entertainment industry. She eventually started playing her music live at venues across town, but an embarrassing experience caused Julie to retreat out of the spotlight, reinforcing her anxiety of performing in front of people. Fast forward, and Julie has now performed on several late-night talk shows, heard her music on the radio, and played at incredible music venues like the Hollywood Bowl. So what happened after that humiliating experience that was able to draw Julie out of her shell again? Well, it has something to do with some trash cans, a castle, and the big music star who lived there. I'm Bobby Gonzalez, and this is Spoken Dreams.
My name is Julie Mintz. I'm a singer-songwriter and recording artist. I'm from the small coastal town of Corpus Christi, Texas, on the Gulf of Mexico. And I'm the middle child of five, which means I'm the peacemaker. And I was a really sensitive, artistic child. I grew up playing piano, singing in choir, but my family was really more professional and academic oriented. My dad's a surgeon and my mom was a high school English teacher. So even though I was really artistically oriented in terms of extracurricular activities, it was never something that was really encouraged that I was going to do as a career. It's just something that I loved to do as a little girl. My family was not musical, but I do remember that they loved music. My dad played Patsy Cline's greatest hits all the time throughout the house. I remember listening to Dolly Parton. I love Emmylou Harris. And growing up in South Texas and hearing that kind of music, I was really influenced by that as a little girl. Pretty early on, I actually had a phobia of playing in front of people. And I remember I asked my mom to ask my piano teacher if I could abstain from playing recitals because I love to play music, but I didn't like the pressure of playing in front of people. So I kept doing it and I sang in choir as well. But again, even in choir, like I didn't want to have a solo. I liked to be in a group. I liked kind of that safety. So I think it was kind of twofold because it wasn't really encouraged in my family to have a creative career and because I wasn't really like a ham or the center of attention. I loved music, but I didn't really see myself as like a lead singer being front and center necessarily. I went to college and I majored in neuroscience. So I thought I was going to go to medical school. I worked in a hospital while I was in college. And I call it my quarter life crisis. I sort of realized that was going to be my life path if I continued on that path, and it wasn't really what was making me happy. And I was having a lot of anxiety every time I'd go to work at the hospital, and I just realized that wasn't what I was meant to be doing. So I kind of tried to look back and see what I had done as a kid that made me happy. And so that's when I started playing music again. You know, I think even when I decided to move to LA, I wasn't completely clear on my life path. I had some family in LA, so that sort of seemed like if I wanted to do something in the entertainment industry, this was a safe place to go. But mainly, my school career center helped me get a job in LA. So that was sort of the reason that I chose LA. And so I was working at a management company that managed actors and artists when I first moved here. I remember when I moved to LA, I was actually going on auditions. I was auditioning for acting roles and commercials and stuff just to pay the bills. And then I had a little keyboard in my bedroom and I would just write songs at night. And I didn't really know like if the songwriting was going to be a hobby. And actually what ended up happening was when I was auditioning for little acting roles, I kept getting roles where I was playing a musician. Those seemed to be the ones that I would book. And so one of my first big roles was on a J.J. Abrams show, and I played a musician. And when I went on the audition, they said, just come in and play a cover song or something, because it's probably going to be, who knows, like a Bob Dylan cover, whatever they can clear for the show. So I just played one of my original songs because I figured that's what I know the best. And so when my manager called me the next day and said that I booked the part, she was like, they want to use the song that you played in the audition on the show. So we have to get them a copy of the song. You shoot in 2 days. And I was like, okay, well, I've never recorded a song before. I just wrote that song in my bedroom. And so they actually paid to put me in a studio to record the song. We recorded a pretty acoustic version of the song, and so it got to be on the show. I sort of started to realize that I felt like those doors were opening more in the music world than in the acting world, and I was really playing shows a lot, writing more. That was much more fulfilling to me because music was expressing my inner world instead of someone else's words. And I think that's why I was always really drawn to songwriting. But then there's definitely that hump of playing shows, and especially if you're playing a lot of shows in LA, it can be really hard to grow your fan base. And particularly, I play beautiful, quiet singer-songwriter music. So depending on the venue, you know, if you're playing in a bar or something, people might not be in the mood to hear that kind of music. And I remember I had a show at Hotel Cafe on a Monday night at 11 p.m. and it was a tiny turnout. And the next day, someone from the Hotel Cafe called me and they asked me if the door checker made a mistake because he only counted 12 people. And it was so humiliating. I was like, no, there were only 12 people there. And that kind of traumatized me. And I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. I was still writing songs, but I was just really averse to playing shows. I just didn't want the stress of it. I was living in this little rental house in Beechwood Canyon. And I coincidentally lived across the street from a castle, which was unusual because my house was tiny, but there was a castle across the street. One day, it was a Sunday, I came out into my driveway, and there was a guy in my driveway, and he was moving all my trash cans, and his car was like idling at the end of my driveway, and he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to go to a party at your neighbor's house, and there's nowhere to park. I was just going to move your trash cans and park in your driveway if that's okay. And he was like really caught red-handed, but I was like, it's fine. I don't need to get out today. And he was like, no, I'm really embarrassed. I feel bad. Come to the party with me. And I was like, no, I'm not going to go to a party with you. And he was like, well, it's your neighbor who just bought the castle. And I was like, yeah, I don't know him. I don't know you. It's fine. I'm not going to go to the party. And he would not let it go, I think, because he felt so bad. And so he's like, please, you just come for 5 minutes. So I walked across the street with him. And I had heard that Moby bought the castle. I didn't know that much about Moby. I knew that he was an electronic music artist, but I didn't know that much about his background. And I went to the party at Moby's house and I met him briefly. And it turned out that we had a mutual friend and he was like, oh, you're my neighbor across the street with the red door. I've heard about you. He's like, you're a singer-songwriter, right? And I was like, yeah, I am. And he was really friendly and he got my email. I left after like 5 minutes. I felt so uncomfortable being there, but he was very friendly and he emailed me, I think the next day, and invited me to come over and have tea, and we became really friendly, and he would have me over sometimes. He asked me to play him some of my songs, and he would give me songwriting advice. And then pretty early on in our friendship, he just sent me an email one day that said, hey, I'm playing, I have a new album out, and I'm performing on The Tonight Show. Would you sing backup for me? I had to read the email like 5 times. I could not process what it said. I legitimately thought that he was asking me if I knew somebody that could sing backup for him. Because I was just like, it was really exciting. And to go from, you know, not wanting to play shows anymore and still writing songs, but not really knowing what I was going to do next and just feeling like, you know what, if I play another show, there's a chance that nobody's going to come and I don't know what to do next. To the next thing being somebody asking me to play on The Tonight Show with them was really hard to process. I didn't let him know that. I just wrote back and said, yes, I'd love to. That sounds great. And so that was kind of the beginning of getting to work with Moby. Since then, I've had the opportunity to do Conan with Moby. And then just this year, we did The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And whenever he had shows, he would ask me to sing backup or play keyboards in his band. It was kind of the perfect setup because I got to play music and do what I love and have the experience of being on stage. It was kind of like exposure therapy because I got to be on stage, but the focus wasn't on me. I knew that people were there to see Moby, and so I got to do the part that I love, but not have that like perfectionism pressure of feeling like I have to say the perfect thing in between every song and entertain everyone that's here, because that's really what they're expecting from the main artist, and I'm just there to support him. And so that was a really good experience for me to have. I played with him for several years, and at this point I still hadn't recorded my own music, except for that one song that I had done for the TV show. I was playing shows occasionally, but I would say kind of begrudgingly. And Moby would always come to my shows and support me. And after one of my shows, he was like, you have such great songs. You sound great live. Why have you never made a record? And I was like, I don't know. I just feel like I don't know how to do it. That had kind of always been my thing. You know, I wasn't on a record label yet. And so he was like, okay, I'm going to produce your record. You need to make a record. And so he produced my EP a couple years ago, an EP called The Thin Veil, and it was all songs that I had written before I had met Moby. After we made that EP, Moby had a private show for KCRW in the backyard of Ann Litt's house. She's like a prominent KCRW DJ, and there were a lot of important music industry people there. During Moby's set, he was like, hey, you know, my friend Julie that plays in my band has a new record out, and let's like break up the set and let her come forward and play a song. And so, which he had not warned me about, but that was fine. You know, I was prepared to play my songs, but I didn't have my guitar there, and he plays electric guitar. And so I stepped forward from behind the keyboard and he handed me his guitar. The guitar strap was really long, but it was like one of those moments where you're in front of a crowd and instead of just taking a second and being like, okay, I need to adjust, I need to fix the guitar strap, I just wanted to like, I don't know, not cause like a stir, and I just wanted to start. Well, basically I realized that I actually couldn't reach the high string. So I was trying to like use my strength to hold the guitar up, but I couldn't. Every 4 bars when this one chord came up, it sounded horrible. I mean, it was mortifying. After Moby's set was done, I was literally crying in Ann Litt's bathroom. I was so humiliated. And she came in there and she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I'm so embarrassed. I literally looked like I don't know how to play guitar in front of 100 people. That's probably the most embarrassing. Talk about stage fright. I'm surprised that didn't just completely re-traumatize me. But anyways, she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. That was totally fine. Like, everyone knew you were playing Moby's guitar. And she was like, I loved that song. Can you get me a copy of it? I want to play it on KCRW. And so that's how I ended up getting my first radio play from my EP on KCRW. I guess it just goes to show that, you know, even, you know, when something seemingly embarrassing happens, something good can come of it. So I have been working on my full-length record for the past year, and that's almost done. And I have my first single that's ready to go. It's called Sorrow Tree. And it's kind of cool how it came about. Moby had actually written it for his album that he just released. And it's sort of interesting because I have written all my own songs by myself, typically, just because I feel like that's the part of music that I love, is getting to express myself. But Moby had written the song for his record called The Sorrow Tree, and he sort of describes it as feeling like a mournful 19th century hymn or dirge. And he thought that my voice would fit perfectly for it because I have a plaintive singing voice. And so he asked me to be the female lead vocal on his record for that song. So that's how it started. I was just going to be singing the song on his album. And when I went to his studio to record it, he was like, you know, I feel like this might be really beautiful acoustic, and I know you're working on your record. Let's make an acoustic version of it and put it in the mix for the songs that you're considering for your album, and maybe it would be fitting. And it turned out that it really was. It's kind of similar topics that I tend to write about, like pining for love and waiting for love and sorrow. I feel like those are really themes that I've explored a lot in my writing. And so it just, even though I didn't write the song, it felt like it fit perfectly. And he produced it in a really beautiful acoustic way. It's just strings, piano, and guitar, and my voice. Beneath the sorrow tree. My full-length record is called Abandon All Hope of Fruition. It actually sounds really depressing and hopeless when you hear the title of the album, but it's based on the teachings of this American Tibetan Buddhist nun named Pema Chodron. I read this one book that she wrote called When Things Fall Apart. I definitely read it when things were falling apart. And one of the teachings that she talks about, stop doing things with the expectation of a positive outcome and just be in the moment and accept where you are. And that like really struck me because I felt like a lot of things that I was doing, you know, like making music, I was like, okay, well, I think I'm only going to be happy if this is really successful and a lot of people hear it and it's really great. Or I'm only going to be happy if I have the love relationship that I really want. And that's a topic that I write about a lot in my music. And so to have that perspective shift and just kind of think, okay, what if you just give up and let go of wanting everything to turn out perfectly and just try to accept where you are? Really, my hope for it is that, of course, that people would hear it and that they would relate to something in it, because that's really why I'm writing music, is to express feelings that I'm trying to work out. And I think it's pretty universal feelings. When you're in the midst of whatever work you're pursuing, especially when you're having like your valleys, it's really easy to just feel like nothing's going right. And, you know, especially when I was having a lot of stage fright and anxiety and scared to perform, and then I was like, I haven't recorded any of my songs because I feel like I don't know how to do it right, or I don't know how to do it perfectly. Now, looking back on that, maybe it's okay that I had all of those experiences. I mean, I also got really lucky. Like, I happened to have an amazingly talented neighbor that I started to collaborate with, and he really helped me produce my music and brought me out of my shell a lot in terms of performing. But, you know, maybe it's good that I didn't have a bunch of crappy recordings. Maybe it's okay that I wasn't forcing myself to perform when I didn't feel ready. I guess you have to try to look back and find the positive in whatever your journey was. And I also really believe that, like, the one thing that gives humans depth is struggling. And that's really, like, the only way that we can develop depth. So going through hard times or doing things wrong is okay too. It doesn't have to, I mean, maybe it wasn't for a reason other than when you come out of it, you have more insight and you're a deeper person, and then you have more to say in your art.
Julie Mintz has a lot to say in her art. Her EP, The Thin Veil, is available right now, and the release of her full-length album is just around the corner. This episode featured her single, The Sorrow Tree, which has a music video debuting very soon, so keep an eye out for that. For more info on Julie and how you can keep up with her, visit our website at ktla.com/spokendreams. And hey, this marks our 50th episode of Spoken Dreams. Thank you to those of you who have subscribed to the show, taken time to write nice reviews, comments, and emails, and everyone who's joined me on the podcast. It's been such a privilege to be able to help share these stories. There are 49 other stories to listen to. You can get those by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to join the conversation, follow me on social media at Spoken Dreams Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and there's a Spoken Dreams Facebook page. Thanks for listening to this episode. Now onward to the next 50. Until next time, break a leg. Spoken Dreams is produced by me, Bobby Gonzalez, for the KTLA 5 News in Los Angeles. Executive producers are Olson Ebright and Jason Ball. And I'd love to hear from you. Tell me what you thought of this week's story, or even tell me your own story. You can shoot me an email at spokendreams@ktla.com.